The Fish and Game Advisory Committee considers measures to protect nanny goats. And the Christmas bird count sees summer species sticking around. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Jillian Rogers. Those stories and more up next. What's the best way to discourage hunters from harvesting female mountain goats? The Upper Lynn Canal Fish and Game Advisory Committee pondered that question at a meeting last week. The committee considered a mandatory quiz for hunters that would educate them about the toll harvesting nannies takes on goat populations. But the group wondered if a quiz would get through to hunters who don't take nannies by accident, but on purpose. KHNS's Emily Files reports.
This is how mountain goat hunting is regulated in the Haines area. Fish and Game takes a survey of goat populations. For every 100 adults they count, they assign 6 points. When a hunter takes a male goat, that's 1 point down. When a female goat is harvested, that's 2 points. So if hunters take nannies, the harvest goes faster and it leaves less opportunity for other hunters. But it also significantly impacts the goats, says Fish and Game area biologist Carl Koch.
If you kill a female, you also take away all the offspring that they're going to have. And loss of too many females can negatively impact the population.
Koch gave an example of the Tokchinik Range goat harvest. In 2013 and 14, more than 50% of the goats harvested in that area were female. Koch said after that, the goat count decreased. Haines resident and hunting guide Al Gilliam brought up the issue to the committee, asking them to consider some action.
You know, there's a lot of people that are simply going to make a mistake and shoot a nanny. And I don't think they should be penalized and lose their goat and lose their, you know, it's a lot of work to go through a goat. All right, but at the same time, there should be a certain amount of responsibility.
Koch mentioned a few things that Fish and Game does in other areas to discourage taking nannies. In one game management subunit near Sitka, the biologist assigns a certain number of points, but as soon as someone takes a nanny, he closes the harvest. In the Valdez and Cordova area, Fish and Game requires each hunter to take a goat quiz at least once.
They would have to learn some goat biology and some of the rationale for leaning toward harvesting males.
The quiz could also help hunters learn to distinguish between nannies and billies, which is more tricky than, say, distinguishing between a cow or bull moose. Fish and Game biologist Kevin White was also on the line from Juneau. He told the committee about a post-hunt survey they did asking hunters around the state a range of questions, including why they harvested nannies.
One of the key findings that we found a little bit disheartening was that of the hunters that shot females, 40% of those hunters did that knowingly. So, for example, they knew that the animal was a female and they decided to take the shot anyways.
White said some of the reasons people gave for purposely taking nannies was the fact that they were subsistence hunting or they thought nannies taste better. He said the educational quiz might not be able to reach that 40% of people who took the shot knowing they were aiming at a female goat. Advisory committee member Kip Kermoyan agreed.
And if most of these guys and gals that were questioned knowingly shot a nanny, it seems all the education in the world isn't going to make a difference.
Gilliam said he's seen goat hunting turn into more of a race in recent years, which could contribute to careless decisions.
I just kind of wanted to bring this to people's attention as a point of discussion before the next cycle comes up, so people can just start thinking about it and realize that we do have a situation here that may become a problem.
The committee didn't take any action at the meeting, but Chair Tim McDonough said he thinks they'll explore the options and come up with some direction to help discourage harvesting nannies by next hunting season. In Haines, I'm Emily Files.
This year marked the 116th annual Audubon Christmas bird count in Haines. Earlier in January, 24 hardy birders faced rainy, icy conditions to get the local data. Haines birders have been involved in the annual Audubon count for more than 20 years, and this year they saw some of the worst weather. The driving cold rain was the reason for low numbers.
32-mile-an-hour winds. Now, if I was a little songbird, I'd be hiding out.
That's local bird expert Pam Randles. She led the bird counting charge and says outside of the typical ravens, eagles, gulls, and ducks, there were some unusual finds this year.
Since 2005, when I started keeping track carefully, we've had a number of new species come in and stay and increase that have showed up on the Christmas count. And then also we've got breeders that are coming in the summertime that didn't used to be here.
One of those new species is the Eurasian collared dove. It's a common sight in yards around Haines, but before 2007, they were unheard of in this area.
And so things really are changing. And I don't know where it's going to go or, you know, it's just changed.
24 volunteers counted in two areas, both spanning a 15-mile radius around Haines and out around the Mosquito Lake area. In all, 1,660 birds were counted on January 2nd, down about 3,500 from last year. Of the 237 species known to live in the area, 43 were noted in this year's count. Birders walked, drove, skied, and snowshoed to avian hotspots. The results are sent to the Audubon Society, which, along with findings from across the country, are entered into a national catalog.
So there's a huge database, and we're learning a great deal about climate change from this.
Randall says that a bird's concentrated range is determined by drawing a circle around where they are observed and marking a dot in the middle. That's called the center of abundance.
And the Audubon did a report a couple of years ago that showed quite a few species' center of abundance had moved up north 200 to 400 miles.
Locally, Randall says she's seen a lot of changes over the years when it comes to her feathered friends.
But this year, for example, we had more summer species than normal. Species that normally are not here during the wintertime were here. Last year, that even included a hummingbird.
The summer visitors spotted this year were belted kingfishers, varied thrushes, and fox sparrows. A red-winged blackbird and an Arctic loon were also on the list of unusual finds. Randall says that while different species seem to be arriving from year to year, she hasn't noticed any that have flown the coop and disappeared completely. Randall says she'd like to see more locals get involved in the annual count. For those who don't want to face the elements, people are needed to simply watch their bird feeders and count.
Also, you can do nocturnal count if you're interested in owls and that sort of thing. So when it comes around next year, we're really encouraging people to join in. First of all, it gives us more data, but it's a lot of fun.
In other bird news, Randall says the mystery of the pheasants has been solved. It turns out the pheasants spotted recently around town were domestic birds that escaped. It's possible the escapees could breed and thrive in this area, she says, if they don't wind up on someone's dinner table first. Klukwan artist Lonnie Hotch got a national nod last week when she was awarded a $5,000 cultural preservation grant and fellowship. The grant came from the First Peoples Fund, a nonprofit that supports indigenous artists across the country. Hotch told the agency that she was honored that her artwork and commitment to her community have been recognized. In a release, Hotch said, quote, "This grant and leadership training will help me to share my artistry with all who want to learn and allow me to continue to give back to my culture and community," end quote. The organization is based in Rapid City, South Dakota, and focuses on community and economic development for tribal communities through support for Native artists. Hotch was one of 27 2016 Native Artist Fellows from across the U.S. Lori Poirier is the president of the fund. She believes that when Native artists have support and opportunities to build reliable and consistent incomes through their work, they thrive, their families thrive, and the whole community thrives. First Peoples Fund is supported in part by a host of national foundations and was founded in 1995. Further information about First Peoples Fund can be found at firstpeoplesfund.org. Walmart announced Friday that it's closing its Juneau location, along with 154 other stores across the country. In Juneau, that means about 180 people could potentially lose their job when the store closes next month. KTOO's Elizabeth Jenkins has more.
Some Walmart associates found out about the news as abruptly Friday morning as everyone else. Ted Guthrie has worked at the Juneau store for about 7 months.
Mostly pushing carts, sweeping up, janitorial type work.
He saw rumors circulating around on Facebook, then he came to work.
Somebody just asked me if I'd heard, and I didn't believe it until I started reading notes around the store and seeing the vendors pulling out.
Guthrie has two kids, and he calls Walmart a good employer.
I believe it'll just cause a less than secure feeling in the community because of the store moving out, and especially a big box store.
That's Mayor Mary Becker. The chain has 13 stores in Alaska, but the Juneau location is the only one that's slated to close. Becker said a regional manager called on Friday to explain why.
He did tell me that the freight was one of the driving forces for the closure, but he also said that they were doing an evaluation of their stores nationwide.
Walmart is a major contributor to city taxes, especially sales tax. Walmart reps say the company decided to close the stores based on financial performance, the cost of doing business, and plans for strategic growth. Despite the potential layoffs, Walmart still plans to open 240 new stores in the U.S. Becker thinks better transportation could help incentivize private sector jobs.
My personal opinion is we need to put the road in so that we do have a method of getting freight up on trucks and maybe less expensive to get to Juneau.
Delia Garcia, a Walmart corporate rep, says associates who have been employed for at least a year could qualify for a 60-day severance package. First, the company will try to find transfer opportunities.
Juneau is in a unique circumstance in that there aren't other Walmarts relatively close by as you might find in other locations that are being closed. And that's why we want to make sure that associates are prepared for potential opportunities elsewhere.
But for Ted Guthrie, transferring to another Walmart isn't something he can do.
No, because my family is established here in Juneau. We don't plan on moving anywhere. So I'll just be looking for another job, I guess.
Nationally, the Walmart closures could affect about 10,000 employees. The Juneau store will close its doors by February 5th. In Juneau, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins.
For KHNS News, I'm Jillian Rogers. Thanks for joining us this evening. You can listen to and read local news stories on our website at khns.org.